Hey, you guys. Happy Sunday.
Yeah.
It's Labor Day weekend.
We watched this one last night. It's not the first time I've seen it. I saw it a long time ago. It was just in the background of a fucking day room and shit, fucking where I was working one time, and watched little bits of it here and there. And it looked cool then. Saw it again and realized it was a Steven Spielberg flick that had fucking Tom Cruise in it.
I had totally forgotten that this was a Steven Spielberg movie. Yeah. Isn't that funny?
Yeah, it's all futuristic, you know, fucking it back in the day. And the story, it holds up. The story kind of holds up in terms of entertainment value. The technology doesn't, but it's kind of a trip where just I think this is only what 2002 maybe.
2002, the movie.
2002.
Yeah.
20 years, man, went by fast, huh? And look how much people's concept of the future has changed. Because this is supposed to be going on in 2050.
2054, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's the same. Okay. Yeah. And they still have newspapers.
Although they were like all like moving around and stuff.
Yeah,
it was kind of like a tablet, essentially. But they were still like kind of throwing them into people's yards as though it was an actual newspaper.
Oh, I thought it was, it had paper.
It was hard to tell. Like I said, they were still throwing the newspaper into the yard like they would have back in the old days. But when you saw somebody like reading a paper, it was moving around like it was a tablet. You know what I mean?
What it was is paper was a screen. It had its own, it was thin, thin and as cheap as a piece of paper, but it was a flexible screen. Because remember, all the damn cereal boxes moved and had their own audio.
Yeah, because I was like, wow, that would get old.
Yeah, because I remember at the time they were saying that, well, eventually screens and computer chips will be cheaper than a piece of paper is today, and you'll see those everywhere. You know, the paper will be moving and stuff. So that's what picked them up on that. But it's a cool flick. I liked it. I enjoyed it. I understand why Tom Cruise demanded to be in it. Because it's got fucking Tom Cruise using his OT powers and using his fucking superior fucking technological prowess to catch bad guys. Then it turns out he's a bad guy. That he's working for the bad guys. And then it starts going in where almost kind of like something. It's almost kind of like a tale that L. Ron Hubbard would come up with when you think about it. Not quite as good, you know, because this is actually Dix. This is Philip K. Dick stories. And we were watching this and I was going like, man, they're doing a lot of shout outs to Blade Runner with the lighting and stuff. And it turns out later on in the credits it was a Philip K. Dick story. So I was like going like, oh, okay, that's why. They did a lot of Blade Runner shit in it.
Yeah, the story for this, actually the Philip K. Dick story, which was called The Minority Report, came out back in the 50s, like 1956. And it's actually like a pretty short story. And I haven't read the short story, but I did read a synopsis of it. The kind of overarching, theme of the movie, as in, you know, there are psychics called precogs that can, tell the future. And actually in the story, it's all crime. In the movie, it's just murder. I'm not really sure why, because I guess they thought that they would make that less complicated. But in the short story, I kind of feel like that's like a lot simpler. There's a lot of stuff going on in the short story that they didn't really do in the movie. But it's funny, like I said, I had totally forgotten. I think I saw this movie back in like the maybe a year or two after it came out. I think somebody loaned it to me and I watched it. And I remember like liking it pretty, you know, pretty well. It's like, I'm not a huge Tom Cruise fan and I don't usually love these types of movies. So I remember like being pretty good, but we were scrolling through Amazon Prime last night and I was like, oh look, Minority Report is on free to me.
Yeah.
So let's just watch that so we can talk about it tomorrow. Cause I kind of remembered some shit about it, but I don't actually remember if I sat through the whole movie before. And actually it was way better than I remembered.
Yeah, it's good. I liked it.
Yeah.
I didn't realize it was a Steven Spielberg movie. It does not have that Spielbergian 80s middle class America vibe to it. It's futuristic. Now somebody was saying that it reminded them of Fifth Element. I had to disagree. It's very different from Fifth Element. What it reminded me of was actually I, Robot. Remember?
Yeah.
This is a lot better than I, Robot.
Yeah, I, Robot was kind of terrible.
Yeah. But visually it reminded me of I, Robot a little bit. Although I, Robot wasn't terrible. It's just, it didn't, it just wasn't, it wasn't that good. Another one this reminds me of a little bit is the last true Arnold Schwarzenegger movie. And that was, what was it called? The one where they were reprogramming people through the eyes and doing all the genetic engineering. What was the fucking name of that one?
I couldn't tell you.
Somebody in the comment sections might remember it. I have it. I just can't remember it. I want to say Eraser, but it's not Eraser. That was a real shitty one. You guys remember what movie it is I'm thinking of? On the cover, it's got Arnold Schwarzenegger with his eyes peeled back, and they're doing something, shooting something in his eye. Not Total Recall.
Yeah, that was an old one. Yeah. Well, interesting, what I was going to say was that I think, from what I could determine, that at least as far as the original stories went, this story, Philip K. Dick's Minority Report, and the story that he wrote that Total Recall was based on, We Can Remember It For You Wholesale, were supposed to be taking place in the same world. And when this movie was making the rounds of, like, when they were trying to get it made, actually, they first conceived it as being a sort of sequel or in the same universe as the Total Recall movie. You know what I'm saying? It was supposed to be set, like, at the same time period and in the same universe. But that kind of didn't end up happening. Although I guess you could sort of say it was sort of kind of in the same universe. Interestingly, I was just watching a review of this. Or kind of like, it wasn't so much a review, but like an explained type of thing, where the dude was coming up with the idea. And I kind of like this idea. I hadn't actually thought about it when I was watching the movie. But his theory is that everything you see in the movie after Tom Cruise's character, John Anderson, gets haloed, as in he gets brought in and they put the halo on it, like he gets arrested for the murder, right? Everything you see after that point in the movie is actually his dream or his hallucination, because that's what they do, like when they arrest you and they put the halo on you, right? They put you in the you know, deep freeze thing or in the vault or whatever, and you just like have dreams for the rest of your life or the rest of your sentence or whatever. So he was pointing out like why he thought that everything, like, so that the entire end of the movie was actually like his imagination.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, Khan, he remembered it was called Sixth Day. The Sixth Day.
Oh, okay. And, I think I saw that.
Yeah, this movie kind of reminds me of The Sixth Day. But Sixth Day, of course, it's an Arnold Schwarzenegger movie, old school Arnold Schwarzenegger movie, probably around the same time, 2002, 2004, around that time. But if you like this one, see Sixth Day. It's good, too. In a similar vein, about genetic engineering. That was the last great Arnold Schwarzenegger movie. Well, some people... He also appeared in some damn... What was the name of that fucking... the ones with all the mercenaries. Shit, man, I don't know why
do you keep bringing stuff up if you can't remember?
If I can't remember that,
you're
shit.
Not even talking about this movie. Yeah, you're talking about other movies. You can't even remember.
Okay,
the title.
Let me talk about you. I ain't talking about this. Jenny's trying to keep me in line about what I'm talking about.
Well, because you keep coming up with all these other movies that you can't. Yeah, feel like you can't. I'm saying, even remember this
one
the
reminded
titles.
Me. I was saying, what's this one reminded me of? It reminded me of The Sixth Day and I, Robot a lot, but better.
Yeah, much better. Yeah, I mean, better. You can tell definitely this was...
You can tell Spielberg.
A Spielberg film, a quality thing, because he really did, when he was, like, talking about adapting this, like I said, it's a lot different than the original short story. Like, the overarching, like, theme of the precogs and pre-crime and everything, that's the same, but a lot of the other shit is different. But he actually brought in, like, a whole team of consultants, you know, like, computer techs and like architecture people and like all this other kind of stuff, because he wanted to create a future that was still like believable, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And some of the shit that was in this movie, like swiping, like, you know, from 2002, that wasn't a thing in 2002, so that was actually something they did predict, like facial recognition, targeted marketing, like targeted advertising, stuff like that. So there was some stuff in there that was, you know, that was accurate, even
Green
though we're
cities.
Like, even though we were like, well, they don't still have malls, really, and they don't really still have, like, newspapers in the sense that...
Right.
Where they just, like, throw it in somebody's yard
and you pick it up. They did not show anything having to do with social media or actual... They did not understand the impact of what social media and the internet would do.
Well, a lot of sci-fi movies to be fair.
It was something that kind of blindsided the mainstream people. they didn't realize how much that would get in the way of the old-fashioned traditional economy. Those people are all obsolete now, you know? I mean, a fucking shopping mall has to be something very high-tech and very expensive in order to survive nowadays.
Grampter's Hammer said, when Tom Cruise ate the rotten sandwich in the fridge.
Oh, yeah, I know.
I was like, man, that was so fucking gross. Why was that even in there? For some reason, like, when I saw
that... why was that in there? Because it was badass.
No, I mean, when I first saw the... When I saw that scene, you know, and the guy, like, that had taken out his eyeballs and popped in the new ones, he put the sandwich, like, a good sandwich in there.
Yeah.
And then, but there was, like, still rotten ones in there, and I was just kind of like, wait a minute, does that mean that Tom Cruise has been there longer than he thought, or that this isn't the first time that he's done this to somebody and he just never bothers like taking the old sandwiches out of the refrigerator?
Yeah. Well, I don't think the doctor did that. The girlfriend did that. It just, they were kind of trashy fucking junkies, you know, and she was grabbing his ass. She liked him, but she was just so trashy. She didn't ever bother cleaning out the refrigerator. And that's what would happen if in a dirty refrigerator.
I had kind of forgotten how much, because I remembered, like I said, I saw this movie probably like in 2003 or 2004, and I had remembered it being like very, very serious, which most of it is, but there are some like funny, like almost, I would almost go like shading over into goofy kind of stuff.
Yeah, like, well, it did have some comedy.
Like the one scene where, you know, they're trying to catch Tom Cruise and like they have the jetpacks.
The jetpack fight.
And then they like bust into those people's apartment and then like the back of the jetpack like cooks the woman's hamburgers and stuff like that. It's just like, you know, there's kind of some kind of silly shit in there. Like,
yeah.
But I said that's okay though.
I think they were trying to lighten the mood of the movie a little bit.
Because it is kind of like, I mean, the whole theme of the movie, I guess, being, you know, free will versus determinism.
Yeah.
It's interesting because in the short story, John Anderton, the main character who Tom Cruise plays in this, is actually like kind of an old, fat, bald guy. And but of course, you know, they can't have that in a movie, so they have to put Tom Cruise in there instead. But he, in the story, he was like the commissioner. He was like the big deal guy that started the whole pre-crime division, whereas in this one, he was just kind of like, he worked for pre-crime, and he had a backstory that made him really into the idea, because his son had been kidnapped and presumably murdered. So he had reason to want to prevent crime and like get all on board with this whole like pre-crime situation. Whereas in the short story, he didn't really have a backstory like that, but he was just like the commissioner and the one that had kind of like implemented it. I think in the short story too, it's weird because I think in the short story it was like post-apocalyptic or like post-nuclear war type shit too.
Yeah, well, that's would have been like, do androids dream of electric sheep?
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's kind it's the same. Yeah, they're kind of all in the same universe.
Kind of like after ecological fucking apocalypses and stuff, all of them.
Yeah, so this one was no exception. But I feel like they didn't really do that in the movie. In the movie, it just seemed like
it was all high tech.
Everything was high tech, and it was just kind of like.
Well, not everything though. When you think about it, because remember the first guy that they caught, he was living in a normal apartment.
Well, that was one thing, and Steven Spielberg had said that this was one thing and why he got all these people together. He said, because I wanted this to be a grounded, believable future. I didn't want everything to be, like, super high-tech, because that's not the way shit works. It's like everything doesn't progress at the same time.
Yeah.
So he's like, some places, like, you know, in Washington, D.C. and Georgetown and stuff like that look just the same because they probably would.
Well,
you know what I mean?
Some of those houses are over 100 years old, so that means a house can stand for over 100 years.
That's what he was saying. So he's I wanted it to be, like, believable. Yeah. So he did actually, like, really think all of that through and get, like, all these consultants in there, because he wanted it to look like a very lived in sort of future, like not super super sleek, and there's still like remnants of stuff that we would recognize.
Tom Cruise's apartment was all high tech. His fucking electric car would stick to the side of the wall and go up and mate with the side of his apartment, and he'd walk out. It was all super high tech, but it was dirty. He was doing drugs in it, smoking future crack.
I like that they made him like a drug addict.
Yeah, he's a drug addict.
And I like that they made him kind of like a fucked up sort of character.
Yeah.
Because I think that's good, because that gave him like an arc. Because like I said, it's based on a short story, and the short story is like very short. So it doesn't really give a backstory as to why this character would want this pre-crime thing. Why it's kind of like the short story was kind of like examining a different thing.
Yeah.
So I like that they gave him this big long that would give him a reason like to want to implement this program.
Yeah, but I was noticing that everything in the movie, though, it conformed to Scientology's fucking Gnosticism It all did. The idea of willpower actually ruling, individual willpower, technology, and then, the drug addiction thing was an aspect. Remember how they were big into Narcanon?
Yeah.
All that shit would have fucking played right into. And then the idea of psychic abilities alongside with, merged in with high tech technology. All right. That's right there with fucking Scientology. Right there with it.
You know what's interesting about this, though, is that even though they didn't change the title, because normally when they adapt Philip K. Dick stuff, they change the title. They didn't change the title of this. The Minority Report is the actual title of the short story. But the weird thing about it is that in the original short story, you know, if you haven't seen the movie or read the story, like what a Minority Report is that there are three precogs, and sometimes, every now and then, one of them has like a dissenting vision, you know, showing like another possible future, and that's called the Minority Report. Now, in the short story, that's kind of like, you know, the fact of him discovering that there is a Minority Report on a particular crime is a thing that kind of makes everybody like question the whole system. Whereas in this one, they find out about the Minority Report thing, but that's not what it almost turns out to be, like, not important, or like a red herring type of thing, because it doesn't play into.
Yeah, it doesn't play into freeing him. Of the crimes.
What plays into it is the whole concept of the echo.
Yeah.
You know, where sometimes the psychics have like echoing visions of like they see the same murder over and over again, and the techs know not to look for that because they're like, oh, they're just seeing it again. That's just an echo of shit that already happened or was already prevented. And the fact of like the main dude, like the main bad guy, Max von Sydow, knowing that that's a thing and like using that to commit a murder, knowing that, you know, that it will be.
So it gets in. So really what the villain is government corruption. That's really that's the main factor. Think about it.
Yeah.
Government corruption caused the whole thing, which that's very Scientology. Very much.
I think it's interesting too that it's almost kind of like, because like I said, they kind of explore in this movie a lot of the whole, you know, is the future predetermined, you know, and making pre-crime like, it, you know, that's going to happen. This person's going to murder this person or whatever. But then like the fact that it's not, you know, exactly the way they thought, and they kind of explore that. But then I don't know. It's kind of like a thing where in the universe of the movie, it's almost kind of like the only people that have free will in the sense that we're talking about is people that know the visions. You know what I mean? The fact that, you know, Max von Sydow, the fact that Tom Cruise's character, the fact that they've seen the visions, so they know what the future is going to be, so they can change it. Yeah. If you didn't work for the police, you know, commissioner, if you didn't work for the pre-crime unit, and you didn't know what the vision was going to happen,
you couldn't be told anything.
Yeah, that's the thing.
And actually, Max von Sydow wasn't part of the government; more like a government contractor. They hadn't fully merged with the government yet, had they?
Well, yeah, and I think that was a good thing to do, because I think in the short story, it had already been implemented everywhere. Yeah. Whereas in this, it was just in D.C. and it was almost kind of like a pilot program.
Yeah, and another thing that's funny is that they just kind of gloss over that this is done by decree. Remember when they were arresting people by decree of something or other, blah, 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 pre-crime? It was just a decree. What hadn't been adjudicated or authenticated by the Senate or anything like that. It was just done by decree.
Thank you, Victor.
What do you say?
I'm going to miss Wednesday and Friday shows. Have some future money. Well, thank you very much. Yeah, I got a couple shout outs too, but I'll wait till the end to do those. But
which goes back into the Blade Runner and you know, the Ridley Scott version of the future, where governments are basically held captive by corporations, that corporations are decreeing what should happen and telling governments what they should be doing because everything's subbed out, which is kind of ahead of its time. That was going on for a long time, though. That really started in the 40s.
But the thing about it, though, is that in this movie, like I said, it's just in D.C., and it seems like Isn't there like, because there's an ad at the beginning where there's like a politician or something like that who's running and is saying, you know, vote yes on this, whatever. So it's, you know, people are still voting on whether they want this or not. But the fact that the Department of Justice sends Colin Farrell's character, you know, Witwer, to DC to kind of like oversee this program, and he's not really like on board with it, and he's kind of in there to look at it to see if this is something that we want to you know, implement nationwide. I think that was a good, from a storytelling standpoint, I think that's a good kind of way of coming into the world, because you're bringing him into the program and he doesn't really know how it works, so he has to have like, you know, Tom Cruise explain it to him, so they don't have to like set it all up in a really clunky sort of fashion.
And by the time this is happening, they already have, what is it, tens of thousands of people in pre-crime prison?
Yeah.
Which are kind of like in suspended animation.
And, yeah, they just put the thing on him and like give him, you know, hallucinations or dreams or whatever.
Yeah, I guess they're pleasant hallucinations. You're just in that shit. You never come back out. Are they pleasant? They show what they're seeing, and it seems like they're just kind of replaying things from their past over and over again.
Yeah.
Didn't say whether or not they age. Maybe they do age. You might just stay in there in a fantasy until you die. But they got them all stacked up.
Like in a vault.
In the end of the movie, of course, when all this shit falls through, they're all pardoned because they didn't commit any crime. They were just going to. Most of them. Some of them, I guess, did, but actually, no. Had any of them actually committed a crime? They showed some people getting drowned. So yeah, that one guy killed that woman by drowning her. So he was in there. But he was one of the early ones, remember?
No. What ended up happening with that? He didn't actually kill her.
Okay, that's
He was
right.
hired by Max von Sydow's character
to
do it, but he was knowing that he would be caught before he killed her. And then Max von Sydow stepped in after they took that fall guy away. So that guy didn't kill anybody either.
Yeah, he didn't kill anybody. He was going to, though.
Max von Sydow killed her.
That's right.
But the reason that he set that up was because so he could kill her and make it look like an echo.
So in that private prison, nobody had killed anybody.
No.
They were just supposedly going to.
Yeah.
That's a trip when you think about it. They'd love to do that.
Well, but that's the thing about this kind of story, is that it really does kind of go into, you know, could that ever be infallible? No, it couldn't. Because obviously, you know, just because...
Humans can game a system, any system.
Yeah, and that's what they're saying. And honestly, like, I kind of like, it's not so much just the... I like that they expanded the story out, whereas before it was just like the Minority Report, like one of the psychics' visions didn't agree with the other two, and which they had that in the movie. But I also like that they expanded it out to that echo thing, because if the psychics really did have echoes, like they kept seeing repeated echoes of a murder that had already happened or already been prevented, let's say, then, and you knew about it, then you could totally game that system. And that's exactly what Burgess did, Max von Sydow's character. And because he knew that it was going to happen, or he could set the whole thing up. You could just hire somebody and look at, as long as it was close enough, they would just like think it was an echo. So I think that was like a really good, and it just went to show that the system could never be infallible, because you don't know, you know, just because like three psychics who are supposedly never wrong, like saw some shit. But as I said, they even like if you worked for the police thing and like saw the visions, well, then you would know what was going to happen and you could change shit.
Well, that's what Scientologists do.
Yeah.
When they're moving backwards and forwards through the whole track. Remember, once they get to what is OT11 or OT8, they now have control over the space-time continuum.
Yeah.
That's how Tom Cruise never gets hurt. If he stubs his toe, he just goes backwards in time and doesn't stub his toe. So therefore, he doesn't stub his toe. If anything fucked up happens, he goes, wait a minute, hold on. How come I didn't go back in time and fix that? Something's wrong. And then he goes and pays Scientology more money to go through fucking auditing to remove a thetan that prevented him from going back in time and not stubbing his toe. It's great when you think about it. So in a way, the pre-crime thing, it's a Scientology power.
It is kind of like that. I can see why Tom Cruise wanted to be in this movie.
Yeah. Remember how they said it was happening in a temple and they were kind of like the priests and they were reading the oracles?
Yeah.
It could be that Tom Cruise's take on the meaning of the movie is that the reason why pre-crime failed is because it wasn't Scientology running it. If it was Church of Scientology, the shit would have worked.
Yeah.
Maybe. Those are Scientology powers.
Yeah.
Well, I think those are OT powers that the precogs had.
Yeah.
Definitely.
It's an interesting thing, too, because I kind of feel like this is maybe like a little bit, you know, since you brought up the precogs, this is a little bit of something that is another thing that they kind of, I don't know if I'd say they gloss over it, because they do bring it up a couple of times. The precogs themselves, in the short story, they were like kind of deformed and, you know, really gross looking and everything. And but in this one, they were just like normal people. And it's almost kind of like, that was another like secondary thing that they were talking about. It's like, can you ever justify like taking these human beings and like subjecting them to this kind of life where they're just like laying there in this pond all the time and they're just like working for you all the time?
Yeah.
Because in the movie, at least, and I think even Tom Cruise says like very near the beginning when he's explaining to Whitwer, whatever that dude's name is, that it's like, well, it helps if you don't think of them as human.
Yeah.
But they are human.
Yeah, but that's what they did in Greco-Roman oracles.
Yeah.
They'd have them girls fucking all day long over the damn fucking gas vents coming out of the damn volcanic ground. You know about that? They'd be fucking high as hell.
Yeah.
Yeah, giving fucking oracle shit. And then they'd die, though. And they said, well, we had to put a new one in there. Imagine that.
Yep.
Yeah. So that's what they're talking about.
Grantham's Hammer said, if murderous thoughts were arrestable offenses, prisons would be full of people who,
yeah,
every person ever had a bad boss. Which
it
is
wasn't the
everyone.
Thoughts, though. They were actually seeing the murder happen in the future and getting pictures of it through the minds of these pre. So evidently, they had proof that the murder did take place in another timeline, but it was prevented. That's what the whole thing was about. They weren't just thinking about it; they had to do it. Just thinking about it wouldn't cause the precogs to see it.
Because one of the best, honestly, I had kind of forgotten about this little scene, but when I was watching a review of it and they showed it again, I was like, oh yeah, that was really great. There was a scene after Tom Cruise, you know, gets brought up in one of the visions that he killed somebody. There's a scene where he kind of runs away and then he comes back and he confronts Whitwer in the elevator. And he pulls a gun on Whitwer, and you can tell that Whitwer is, like, not afraid that he's going to shoot him because he hasn't seen it. Like, yeah. He's like, oh, well, you know, there's no red ball. They call it a red ball,
right,
and it's, like,
yeah,
a crime of passion.
Didn't see this, so you didn't kill him.
Yeah, so he's, like, standing there, like, whatever. Yeah. But then an alarm goes off, like, in the other part of the building, which means that a red ball is it. And then you can see, like, the look in his eyes go, oh, shit. Because, like, he realizes that, what if that's me? Like, what if he actually is going to blow my head off? But it's like, I had forgotten about that little scene, but that was, like,
The precogs saw Tom Cruise killing a guy in the future, and then and he's going, I don't even know that dude. I'm not going to kill him. And then once he actually meets up with the dude and finds out what the situation is, he almost kills him, but because of Tom Cruise's superior fucking OT powers, he resists it and doesn't kill him. And then that guy gets pissed and grabs the gun and pulls it and makes him kill him.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it was the exact same murder that the precogs saw. I don't think it was.
No, because in the vision,
he's shooting him from a distance.
He's shooting him from far away.
Right,
and he says,
yeah,
like, something like, goodbye, right, whatever that
it didn't
name.
Make
Crow,
a difference.
That was his
it
name.
Didn't make a difference, though, because the whole thing was a setup, and they needed him to kill somebody so they could get rid of him, basically.
And the whole thing that they were covering up, like,
yeah,
I said, in the story, it was much more like a simple kind of, yes, he was being set up. He was actually being set up by Whitwer,
yeah,
in the story, which they kind of do that in the movie. Like, you're led to believe that the Department of Justice dude is a bad guy because he's very antagonistic when he first comes there because he doesn't believe that the system is infallible. But he actually turns out to be right in the end. So he actually ends up after he figures out, you know, what ended up happening with Anderton and the murder and everything like that, he actually does think, oh, maybe Anderton was set up, and then, like, he tries to help him. So, you know, and then it's revealed later that, like, Max von Sydow was actually, like, the bad guy the whole time, even though he was all nice and grandfatherly. But, yeah, so I kind of like that they sort of took the story and then kind of, like, misled you about the way it was going. But like I said, I don't know. I saw the review, this one review, like I said, where the guy was theorizing that everything you saw, like the end of the movie, after Tom Cruise gets haloed, gets like put in the vault after the arrest, that everything you see after that is just his imagination or his dream of what happened.
Yeah, a la Total Recall.
Yeah. Well, like I said, these were originally supposed to have taken place in the same universe.
Yeah.
And I will note that the short story ended with, it didn't have a happy ending. It ended with the pre-crime system like continuing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, so I don't know. I know that Steven Spielberg is kind of like, you know, he likes happy endings and stuff, but his later stuff was a lot more complex, I guess. So I could see maybe that maybe you could do that, because the dude in the video pointed out, he's like, there's a couple things that happened, you know, in the end part of the, you know, after Tom Cruise gets arrested, that didn't really make a lot of sense from a plot point of view. Like, where did his wife get his eyeball from?
Yeah.
You know, where, you know, why would Burgess have left the gun there for her to pick up? You know, why? There's like all this stuff that, you know, would they really have gotten back together? She gets all pregnant at the end and stuff like that. It's like, so maybe this was just how, you know, maybe Tom Cruise never did get out of jail and he was just like in there and this was how he was imagining shit worked out. And then the whole system was dismantled and all the prisoners were set free. It's, I don't know, it's kind of an interesting, I didn't think of that when I was watching it, but then I saw somebody's theory and I was like, oh, well, you know, that could be. And like I said, especially since the whole thing tied in with Total Recall, where everything was just like, you're not really sure, like, which is reality and which isn't.
It's a decent flick.
Yeah.
It's a decent flick, and it kind of fits in with that universe, the Total Recall universe. Also kind of like The Sixth Day and, you know, just Blade Runner. It's decent. I liked it. It's better than I remembered it.
Yeah, I understand like why it was visually shot the way it was. Like it was over bleached. Like a lot of the shots were like super white.
White and blue.
And stuff like that. Which was a deliberate choice, which is fine. I'm not a fan of it. I think it was a little bit ugly. But I can see why they did it, though.
That was really in vogue at the time for high tech.
It was, yeah.
They're trying to give that high tech look to things.
Yeah.
It was just that era.
Yeah. Yeah, I know, but...
Yeah.
And like I said, just the way they shot it was a deliberate choice, which, like I said, that's fair enough. I didn't care for it. I thought it was kind of ugly looking.
It's kind of a modified version of the Matrix. Matrix was all kind of black and green kind of tinge, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like everything was kind of through a greenish filter. They just did it blue. Later, it's like it was like they like technology had advanced somehow.
Yeah, everything has to be like super
now
blue.
It's now blue and sleek. Yeah,
I kind of feel like in the 90s and the 2000s everything was either blue tinted or orange tinted.
Yeah.
Like depending on what kind of movie it was, but it was it was just all that kind of thing. But yeah, it was just I'm not like a humongous fan of movies like this, like these big kind of epic sci-fi movies that are like really slick and everything, but this movie actually was a lot better than I remembered, and the story was a lot more complex than I remembered, especially considering, you know, how simple, I don't want to say that the story, the original story was simple, but I like all the stuff that they added to it, you know what I mean, to like give it a richer backstory and like kind of change it a little bit from the story.
I say the movie has aged well. Not from a technological standpoint, but from a storytelling standpoint, it's aged well. Tom Cruise looked good in it. He was probably in his late 30s, mid 30s at that time. It's funny, when you look at his physicality, you could tell he's working out. You could tell he's doing possibly a little bit of PEDs. But I didn't realize that Tom has such narrow shoulders. He's got narrow shoulders for a guy. Another thing that I liked about the movie is that they didn't hide the fact that he's much shorter than other people in this.
Yeah, they didn't at least try to make him like look bigger than everybody else.
Yeah, you know... In other movies, they really try to fucking give the
downplay that
give
that
the illusion
tall.
That he's the same size or as big as everybody else. That he's kind of a big guy. He's a little bitty guy, you know. Actually, I didn't say little bitty. He's about 5'6", probably. Although they'll never claim that. They'll claim that he's 5'10".
Yeah, well.
No, he's 5'6".
It's just, I mean, there wasn't too much. Like you said, you know, the first scene where they kind of show him doing his stuff, you know, with the sliding thing where he's doing this, that, and the other thing. You can tell And this is one of the reasons why I always have, like, trouble watching, like, Tom Cruise movies, because he always just comes across as, like, just that little bit, like, super cocky. Like, awesome I am.
This is my tech shit I'm doing.
Check it out. He's all serious and everything. So it's like that just kind of, like, funny to me. And there are some kind of things in the movie where people talk about, oh, man, he's the best and this and that and the other. But it wasn't too egregious in this one. And actually, there was, like, a lot. There was so much going on in this and just... You know, the philosophical questions it raises are, like, so interesting. And I didn't even realize this movie's, like, 2.5 hours long, because it really didn't seem all that long.
No, it moves quickly.
It kind of, like, just flew by.
Yeah.
You know, that, like I said, there are a couple of, like, you know, like, the jetpack fight and, like, the whole thing where he goes and he gets, like, sealed in the car and all that other kind of stuff, which is kind of, like, which is, like, a little bit goofy, but, you know.
Now, Tom's got another sci-fi movie that I also liked. I want to see this one again, too. Actually, I think I have it. I have it on Blu-ray. It's called Oblivion.
Yeah, that was a good one, actually.
And I really liked that one. I've only seen it twice. I want to see that one again. I want to reanalyze that one. Oblivion... based on memory, is even higher end than this one visually. It had a really good, but this one, man, the story's really good, and it's like other, you know, Dix type movies. You know what I mean? Like fucking Blade Runner type stuff, and you know, fucking what was the other one that he
Total
did?
Recall.
Fucking Total Recall. Yeah, it's like that. So it's good. It's good.
A lot of Philip K. Dick stuff has been adapted.
So I want to take a look at Oblivion again. I remember really enjoying that. And he's got another sci-fi one, his version of War of the Worlds, which I've seen several times.
I don't love that.
It's, I remember visually it was really good, but it stuck to the original story of War of the Worlds pretty closely, maybe a little bit too closely in certain ways, but then it diverged in others. Like, they weren't from another planet, per se. They were from deep underneath the Earth, which I thought was fucking corny. They've been waiting down there for millions of years. And it would have been better to have them come from another planet. Maybe they were underneath the surface of Mars. That would have made a lot more sense. That they were underneath the surface of Mars for millions of years, and now they're ready to come out. And that way you could have the whole H.G. Wells element of the story where, you know, the astronomers are seeing them launch from underneath the surface, and you see in the ships coming and everything. Because that, you know, that part of the original Wells story built up a lot of suspense.
Yeah.
That they're coming. You can see them coming.
Yeah.
You know? And then they're trying to make peace with them when they show up, and then they get annihilated, you know? It's like in the whole trying to make peace with them and getting annihilated is where the 50s version of War of the Worlds got it right, where they send the priest down there. I'm going to talk to them. They're God's creatures. And then they fucking annihilate the priest. Nothing but just a shadow left on the ground of him. Yeah, that was pretty cool.
Yeah, I was going to ask about... because Xanadu was saying about The Man in the High Castle, which I actually haven't seen. I haven't read the book either, but yeah, I knew that they had made like a adaptation of it. It was like a series. They also did a series of this, Minority Report series. I think it started in 2014... and ran for a season or two, but I don't know. I heard it was okay, but I haven't seen it either. And then Granthers was asking if there were any Philip K. Dick stories that haven't been made into a movie yet. I don't know. I'm sure there are a couple, but a lot of his shit has been adapted. Somebody asked about Dark City. I definitely want to do that one of these days because I really, really like that movie. Somebody also brought up Dragged Across Concrete, which is on my list to do as well. And Take Shelter, which is also on my list. I just haven't got around to it yet. So we had a couple shout-outs to do. I wanted to save them till the end, right? So yesterday, after we streamed, or wait, no, we didn't stream yesterday, but yesterday afternoon, we got a little package last night. And in it, it was from Sergeant Rocco, and there was some chocolates in there. Because remember on Wednesday night's show, he said he was going to send us some Buckeyes. Because I said I had never heard of that. Like good. Chocolate and peanut butter.
Yeah.
And man, they're pretty damn good.
Kind of like a real soft, creamy version of a Reese's Peanut Butter Cups.
Yeah.
Now they came, they were a little bit melted, but
a couple of them were melted on the sides. But the ones in the middle were
and
still
solid. And it's because they didn't... When they dropped them off, they didn't tell me they were on the front porch.
Yeah.
I just had to find them out there.
Because they had ice packs in there, like, or dry ice things.
It was like dry ice in there, but it had already kind of, The dry ice had already gotten weak. It wasn't cold when you got them out of there, was it?
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's hot here, y'all.
It's hot.
But like I said, I think really the only ones, the ones on the side were like a little bit melted.
Yeah, they weren't that bad.
But
they weren't round. Still... They kind of went a little...
But, you know, they're, like
they're
I said...
Put them in the refrigerator and they hardened back up.
Yeah, they're still good. Yeah. Also, wanted to say, too, got this.
Yeah. Look at that from Bee's Nest. Bee's Nest got that in Mexico.
Look how fucking from cool a that is.
Turn it so they can see it.
Oh, my God. Fucking, that's so awesome.
Yeah, Dia de los Muertos skull.
Yeah, that's so awesome.
And like a dude, you can tell that fucking... You can tell that Bee's Nest is a man. Motherfucker left the price tag on it. Ain't that something?
Dudes don't think about anything.
I don't know what it is that they are thinking about.
Yeah.
But, oh, and also, remember a long time ago, I said that I was working on a Halloween board game, and I said, oh my God, I only have a couple things to do to finish it and stuff like that. Guess what? It's fucking done. And I just got the proof copy of it yesterday, which means I just, a couple hours ago, put it up for sale. It's kind of expensive, because there's a lot of shit in here, because it's got lots of cards and little pumpkins and all kind of stuff, but that's what it is right there.
That's a new game. Show them the back, dude.
And it's a new game that I made. It's a board game. It's got a big, huge-ass board, and it's all Halloween, like little Halloween costumes and shit like that. It's super cool. Yeah. So there it is. It's on the Game Crafter. I'll probably put there's a link to the Game Crafter thing in there, but I just put it up for sale today because I just got that yesterday and I looked through all the stuff to make sure it all looked good. And, you know, and it looks good. I have a couple more that, I have my Absinthe one and my Ancient Egyptian one. And I also, I ordered proof copies of those too, but I have to wait for the proof copies to come and I have to look at all the shit to make sure it's right. Before I can put them up for sale. And then I think all the games that I had up there will be available. And then eventually I still want to do like a horror trivia game one of these days. And I definitely want to do one that's like, I wanted to do one like a German expressionist type of look or type of theme to it. But I don't know what the game's going to be yet. That's probably going to be next year though. But yeah, but I finally got all the ones that I had up there like kind of done and ordered so I could look at the proofs. So, you know. Rest of the message got it cut off, Jenny. Oh, want to say your hair looks awesome today. Well, thank you very much. I just shaved it earlier today. Because probably, I think tonight we're going to go out, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Because tomorrow's Labor Day, so they're doing like a special.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of like Memento Mori, but it's kind of, I think it's like a couple different DJs.
All right.
I think, as far as I'm aware. But yeah, they're doing like a special one tonight because tomorrow's a holiday. So we're going to go out tonight. So we didn't go out last night. That's why we watched so many movies. Now, tomorrow, we're going to be talking about Fire in the Sky.
Yeah. The movie.
The movie about Travis Walton.
Yeah, we saw it.
We watched that on last night, too, because we were scrolling through Amazon Prime. And I was like, oh, yeah. And it's weird because remember we did the show about Travis Walton?
Yeah.
And I could have sworn that I watched Fire in the Sky before we did that show. But, like, then we started watching the movie. And I'm like, you know what? I don't think I've fucking seen this movie. Yeah. I've seen scenes from it. Like, you know, the alien abduction and everything like that. But it's like, I don't think I'd ever sat and watched the whole thing. And I'd forgotten, like, how star-studded the cast was. And
yeah, it's better than I remembered it. It's just the abduction scenes of what the aliens did do not fit what Travis Walton said. And I don't think Travis Walton was real happy with that angle of the movie. They definitely tried to take it in the direction of, like, Alien 1 or Alien 2. Real fucking slimy, organic fucking ships and everything. That's not what he said.
Yeah, it was like, clean up your ship, aliens. God damn.
That's not what it was.
It's so goopy.
And I like Travis Walton's story about what happened when he got abducted, you know.
But maybe, like, well, I don't know. I guess we'll talk about that tomorrow, too. But it's kind of like, maybe that wouldn't have made, like, as good a movie.
Well, it's because it wasn't that believable, what he said.
Well, the shit that's in this movie isn't all that believable. Yeah, right. It's even less believable.
Right.
But like I said,
even though
it's still
a weird case, I think all that shit was just recovered memories from hypnosis. Because when they first found him, he couldn't remember what happened.
Yeah,
that's the truth. I don't think he.
Well, it's kind of like, remember we talked about this a lot on our Satanic Panic shows, where it's just kind of like there was a subset of therapists and stuff like that that were hypnotizing people and, like, maybe deliberately or not, giving people suggestions and leading them down a certain kind
These are the same people that got little kids to say that they were abducted by satanic cults and flushed down the toilets into secret rooms and then
where Chuck Norris was.
Yeah, with Chuck Norris. And that, the Satanists all escaped in a balloon and just fucking stupid shit like that. Look, you can get kids to say anything.
Well, yeah, they're very imaginative.
Yeah.
Beowulf asks, what was our favorite part in Minority Report? Honestly, I quite liked the opening sequence where they were, the whole thing where they were setting up where that one guy was, like, going to kill his wife and the lover. Because I like that I like that it set up the whole concept of pre-crime and everything like that without really explaining it. Like, it just kind of showed it. So I thought that was really well done. And I liked a lot of the vision sequences. Yeah. Now, the woman that played Anne Lively, and you only see her really in the visions, was that not Jessica Harper? I'm pretty sure that was Jessica Harper. In case you don't know who that is, she was in Phantom of the Paradise and the original Suspiria, among many other things. She was also in the Suspiria remake, briefly, but I could have sworn that was her, but I don't know if it was.
My favorite part is when he got his eyes swapped out.
That was also a really good like when that whole time when he was in that like scuzzy ass apartment and that dude was like real like
he had the timer and shit.
That was a very good sequence.
He's getting
actually.
Ready to change his eyes. You locked me up.
And I'd be like, shit. Maybe I should find another eye replacement eye replacement technician.
Yeah.
I'm sure they're a dime a dozen in the future. Well, I guess there was like a big black market in like getting your eyes swapped out, right? Because everything was like was done through your eyeballs. So, yeah. All right. So, I liked the spooky plants, says Sandra. Yeah, that was a weird scene.
Genetically engineered plants, I guess.
Yeah, with all the... Because, you know, of course. Google says that was Jessica Harper. See? Okay, I was right. I know I recognized her. I was like, that looks just like Jessica Harper. Yeah, all right. So, so tomorrow we'll be back talking about... Hopefully we won't be too hungover. And we'll be talking about Fire in the Sky. So, thanks everybody for dropping by. We'll see you guys tomorrow afternoon.